This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Welcome to Radio EcoShock on the green side of your radio dial, KKGN San Francisco. I'm Alex Smith. Remember $4 a gallon gas last year? A lot of us pictured SUVs up on blocks in the driveway. Nobody wanted to give half their paycheck to the oil companies. GM and Chrysler went bankrupt in the exodus from gas guzzlers. Our guest today says, you ain't seen nothing yet. The pain at the pump will only get worse. It seems everybody wants more oil, even if the economy here is in the tank. Did you know China sold more cars than the U.S. last year? Right now, somebody in India is trying out their first car, and a farmer in Brazil finally gets his gas water pump. The oil economy is slithering around the world with big implications for our climate and our jobs. Yet world energy experts say we can't get any more production. In fact, some of America's biggest suppliers are facing declines. Mexico, America's number two supplier, is struggling to fill budget gaps as the giant Cantarell oil field runs out. A Houston oil expert says even the Saudis are struggling to keep up. It's called peak oil, and we're there. Gas prices can only go up. Is that a looming disaster or a good thing? Christopher Steiner is senior staff reporter at Forbes magazine. His new book is $20 per gallon, How the Inevitable Rise in the Price of Gasoline Will Change Our Lives for the Better. Welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks very much.
Christopher, why did you write this book?
Well, I've always been interested in how people tailor their behavior according to gas prices. And I thought a long time ago, this is going back 7 or 8 years now, when we got to $2 per gallon across most of the country. I was living out west at the time, and I remember thinking that was a really big deal. And nobody else, I mean, people grumbled a little bit, but nobody else really seemed to care that much. People kept on buying SUVs. I mean, the Expedition kept on selling well. People generally didn't change their behavior whatsoever. We got to $3 several years ago, 3-4 years ago, and again, nothing really happened. We got to $4 last year, as you recall, in May, across most of the country, and everything changed. It was, of course, a front-page story everywhere, every single day. In addition to the fact that you couldn't get rid of your SUV for 20 cents on the dollar, and you couldn't find a Prius for anything close to sticker price, Americans drove 100 billion less miles in 2008 than they did in 2007. And we've never had a drop like that before. In fact, Americans usually drive more every year, almost every year going back to like 1981. So clearly $4 was a giant tipping point for Americans. And so I asked myself, well, going forward, past $4, what other tipping points are out there for us? At what point can we expect airlines to go out of business but then bring in stuff like high-speed trains for much of the nation? You know, what price of gas do things like that become a reality?
How could you research something like that? Did you go to experts at universities, or what did you do?
I went to any experts I could find. And, of course, there's a lot of people with a lot of different opinions on this type of thing. But generally, you needed some sense of imagination to do a book like this. But I also tried to ground it in as much fact and research as I could. So, for instance, when we talked about airlines, I went to a former airline pilot who used to fly for United and now has a consulting business, a booming consulting business, basically advising Wall Street what airlines are doing well and what airlines aren't and where their futures lie. And I talked to him at great length about, what price does the American airlines, not meaning American airlines, but U.S. airlines, at what point does that paradigm change forever? And, you know, if we came up with the price $8 per gallon based on their operating costs and stuff like that. And so I don't spend too much time talking about how I got to that conclusion financially, maybe a page or two, but we talk about what happens when that type of things happen. And, you know, and lots of things happen to our lives, and I think that's the interesting part of this equation. I mean, there's been plenty of books on peak oil that talk about why there's going to be peak oil, but not many books that kind of deal with the interim and how our lives change.
I'll bet some people get steamed at you just for talking about $20 a gallon high prices like that. So how do you react to that?
Well, I have to be honest with you. When the book came out only about 5 weeks ago, and I was not prepared for some of the vitriol I've run into over the last month. I guess I was naive, to tell you the truth. I mean, it makes perfect sense to me now, but I remember my first live radio show with callers, and most of the callers pretty much hated me, and I didn't expect that. I don't know why I thought I'd be loved, but I've jived with it now, and I try to base most of my responses to people in as many facts and figures as I can, because a lot of people just run at you with platitudes that and sometimes really have no base in reality. So you just try to combat that type of thing with facts, numbers, and things that we know to be true.
Well, you're not advocating this. I mean, the International Energy Agency has predicted that world oil production could decline by as much as 9% per year, which is just a fantastic drop. So it's not just you that's saying this.
No, it's certainly not just me. And, I mean, there's been a lot of noise around peak oil for a long time. There's been a lot of great books written about it. Certainly Matthew Simmons' book is probably, you know, called The Twilight in the Desert, is the authoritative source on, you know, talking about oil wells and where oil isn't going to come from in the future, because where he thinks he's a guy down in Texas with a oil investment bank, you know, things, conclusions he's come to as to where people are lying about their oil numbers and how much we can expect a decline. So I kind of wanted to take the next step in the conversation is, okay, so we're at peak oil. So what? What happens? And, you know, there's a couple different schools of thought here. One is kind of the James Kunstler long emergency school of thought, where basically we're going to break down into anarchy and you'll be raising goats in your backyard if you're lucky. You know, otherwise you'll, you know, end up a victim in some kind of crazy resource war. But, you know, I don't think that's going to happen. In fact, I mean, there's still a lot of oil left in the ground. So let's say oil production goes down 15-20% in the next 15-20 years. Well, you know, that still means we're taking out 70 million barrels a day out of the earth. That's still a lot of oil. Certainly, it's not enough oil to live how we do now. Also, considering that there's going to be 2 billion extra people on the globe demanding that oil, who live middle class lives, that don't live middle class lives now. Right now, there's only a billion of those people. But the point is, we'll adjust. The price will go up, and we'll use less in everything we do. And so the big question is, societally, how does that affect me and you? What does our live look like?
Well, that's one thing I like about your approach. There are a lot of doomsters who figure we're going back to the Dark Ages, and as Kunstler would say, everything made by hand. You admit there's some serious pain coming, but can you tell us more about some of the positive changes we might expect from higher gas prices?
And certainly, yes, I can, and a lot of people would see these as positive. Some people won't. So in my opinion, they're positives. But I think when you talk about just in general, our dependence on foreign oil, well, there's no quicker way to get off it than the price is spiraling out of control. But beyond that, there's all sorts of weird little changes that are going to take place in our lives that are for the better. When you talk about America's obesity rate, which has doubled since 1978 to over 30% of American adults, that is roughly correlated with very low prices in oil. And there's a professor at the University of North Carolina, Charles Cotermouch, who has linked the low price of oil to obesity, and he has done research that says for every dollar increase that we see the price of gas go up, America's obesity rate will go down by 10%. So, I mean, and that's an amazing statistic. So, and just by going for the gas, and also it saves us a ton of money in healthcare. So as the price of gas goes up a dollar, we save $11 billion on healthcare costs that we would have spent on obesity-related diseases. So you can imagine, a price spike to $7 or $8. Now, we want these types of things to come in over time. You know, if we all woke up tomorrow and gas was $9 a gallon, that would be an economic catastrophe. But, you know, over time, if we get there slowly, people will make the adjustments. They'll live denser. They'll walk more. They'll use their bikes. They'll use more mass transportation. And the difference between a guy who walks to the train just half a mile from his house and gets off the train and then walks another half mile to work, you know, we're talking about a five-minute walk. The difference between that guy and a guy who gets out of bed, goes into the garage, gets into his car, drives to work, gets out of his car, and sits at his desk, that's huge when you amortize it over the course of, say, 10 years of working. You know, the other guy missed out on burning hundreds of thousands of calories because he was driving his car. And in general, suburbia and sprawl have a lot to do with our obesity rate. Certainly, they're not the only factor. I'm not claiming that. But as we live more densely and depend on the car less, we will be less obese.
Well, just a note for you and for our listeners to back that up. A professor at the University of British Columbia, Dr. Larry Frank, also did a similar study, and he found a direct correlation between suburbia and overweight to obese people. Listeners can hear that in our program titled Building Madness, broadcast on June 6, 2008, free from our program archive. And don't miss our interview on Globesity in the EcoShock program, May 22, 2009. Well, Christopher, North Americans are starting to get that idea of peak oil, but you were brave enough to bring in the problem of climate change as well, and this from a Forbes man, the Capitalist magazine. What can you tell us about that?
Climate change?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think it's real. And sometimes, I don't know if you call it global warming or global weirding or what it is, because certainly I live in Chicago, and I will tell you, the last three summers we've had here have been incredibly cool. I mean, and our winters have been very cold, too. It's bizarre. But clearly, when you look at the raw statistics in the Arctic, there is something happening, and it's generally not good, especially when you consider what rising sea levels will do to a lot of the great cities in the world. And so, you know, I think we all know that at some point we have to put a price on carbon, and that, of course, will affect the price of gasoline greatly, as that's pretty much pure carbon. And, you know, that gets to the point of a gas tax, I think, a carbon tax. And that, a gas tax, and I'll upset a lot of people when I talk about this, but, I'd say another dollar per gallon of gasoline that was just a pure federal tax, maybe phased in 25 cents at a time over 6 months at a time, I think that would greatly benefit our country. And I'm not the first one to come up with this idea, obviously. I mean, Thomas Friedman does a very good job lobbying for it in his last book, Hot, Flat, and Crowded. But he's right. Basically, we're going to pay $6 or $5 per gallon for gas at some point. Do we want to do it now and take our medicine now and keep that money in the country to build out the infrastructure we're going to need to live on less oil? Or do we want to take our medicine later and send that money overseas to places where it never comes back to the United States?
You are listening to Radio EcoShock Green Radio right here in San Francisco on KKGN. Find us every Sunday night at 10:30 on 960 AM. I'm Alex Smith, heading into a new fall season. Michael Jackson, sorry, not here. While the mainstream is filling your head with toxic fluff, we'll get you the latest climate disruption, heat waves, storms, and ways out of this sorry mess we're in. It's Activist Radio breaking out. Please tell your friends about Radio EcoShock and meet us on the web at ecoshock.org. Now back to our interview with Christopher Steiner. Christopher Steiner is the author of the new book, $20 per Gallon, How the Inevitable Rise in the Price of Gas Will Change Our Lives for the Better, from Grand Central Publishing. It seems you think some history, social history, is reversible. You predicted cities like Detroit and Pittsburgh could be repopulated again. Why would that happen?
Well, basically, it's a lot easier to go reuse a Detroit or a St. Louis or a Cleveland than it is to go build a new one. And certainly in the future, people are going to want denser lives. We've already seen this effect in some other cities. Certainly, Chicago never had the type of blight or fleeing to the suburbs that Detroit or St. Louis saw. But we had a little bit of that. But, you know, over the last 15 years, Chicago's neighborhoods, the density has gone up. I mean, it's been a really amazing effect. There's a lot of people who want that kind of livable, walkable lifestyle, and there's a lot of people all over the country who want that, and I think it's a movement that's already in place, and that's not in regards to people fleeing the high price of gas. It's just that they realize they're thinking about the carbon footprint, they're thinking about, you know, being more local, in addition to the fact that you have this aging boomer population that has basically finished up with the big house, their kids are out, you know, they want to go back to the cities. So there's already momentum in this direction. In the future, when people are forced out of, you know, these large exurban homes because it's not worth it to drive everybody 7 miles to wherever they're going, be it the store, be it school, be it work, and when they want to get into these walkable neighborhoods, places like Detroit and Pittsburgh are going to be a natural. I mean, those infrastructures exist. They're there. They're already built. All we have to do is fix up the buildings, patch up the roads, and we're ready to go. And I really honestly believe that those places have a very good future as soon as we start seeing higher gas prices.
But some of the suburbs further out called exurbia, whether it's in California or anywhere in the country, could be abandoned.
I think that's definitely possible. You know, certainly they're going to be worth a lot less money. And you've already seen that happen in some places. When you go to like the edges of Riverside, California, those places have been hit harder than any when it comes to the housing bust over the last 2 years. And I think that's part of people realizing that these neighborhoods are not going to be where you want to be in the future. And when you talk about these places that are down 50% in value, you know, over the last 3 years, those are the same places that in the future will be worth even less. Now, it's not going to be nice for anybody to lose their home equity, but we've seen this happen before. We saw it happen again in the St. Louis's and the Detroits and the Clevelands of the world 50 years ago. It's happened before. We survived it then. We'll survive it again, except this time it's going to go in the other direction.
But everything we've been buying has been shipped long distance from China. You've talked a little bit about globalization. What happens to the whole Walmart model of our economy?
Well, Walmart's an interesting case. I mean, some very smart people at Walmart who have been able to harness the effect of globalization better than any other company on earth. And so what you have here is this network of 4,000 stores in America with 6,000 global suppliers. 80% of those suppliers are in China. So they bring the stuff over from China and disseminate it with 7,000 semi-trucks. This is a network built purely on cheap oil. Without it, it can't survive in its current form. Will Walmart morph to some kind of 12,000-square-foot store on Main Street rather than a 200,000-square-foot store 5 miles outside town? I don't know, but I would say that's the only chance they have of surviving in a world of higher-priced oil.
And what about our food? I mean, we use fossil fuels for the fertilizers, for the tractors, for the trucking, for the refrigeration, for the long-distance transport. If oil goes way, way up, are we just going to starve, or what happens?
Well, certainly food's going to get more expensive. And as it does, it's going to be up to a lot of the innovators and entrepreneurs in our country and around the world to figure out cheaper ways to make, ship, and get food around. And I think those things will happen. There's people basically waiting with solutions right now that, say, aren't going to come into play until we get the prices of, say, $7 or $8 gasoline. But those solutions do exist. Will we pay more for our food? We will. Will we starve? No. And I also think we're going to see a lot more local food. Like for me, when I live in Chicago, when I walk into a grocery store, I often see apples. I usually see apples from New Zealand and Washington State. I almost never see apples from Southwest Michigan and Southeast Wisconsin, even though those areas are very close to Chicago, and they're very intense orchard areas. They're full of apples, but if I want an apple from those spots that are less than 100 miles from my house, I have to drive to the farmer's market, or I have to drive up to those orchards and pay the farmer and pick the apples myself. And who has time to do that? It's very hard to eat local right now, as I think a lot of people know, because a lot of people want to do it. In the future, it's going to be easier. When you walk into a local store, you're going to see local produce more so than, say, now where I see most of my produce comes from foreign countries, Mexico, Chile, and places like Washington State and New Zealand.
So, Chris, let's get crazy now. Gas goes to $16 or $20 a gallon, say 10 or 15 years from now. What would North America's economy and society look like? Can you give us some pictures of that?
Well, I think what we have to hope for is that we get a very smooth, slow climb to those types of prices. And, you know, again, if we woke up tomorrow and gas were $15 a gallon, it would be economically ruinous. If we get there over the course of 2.5 decades, I think we will make adjustments. And I think the airline industry will basically be gone. Certainly it'll still exist in some extent because there will always be people who will pay to get somewhere quickly. So the airlines, one or two of them will still be around, but most of them will be gone. But what we will have sprouting up in most places is high-speed train networks. And I know California has wrestled with this thing for a while. Whether that actually gets done in the next few years, I'm not sure. But what will make sure it gets done is higher gas prices. And just like California will have its own network that will extend up to Portland and Seattle, the Midwest will have its own network that goes from Chicago to St. Louis to Milwaukee to Minneapolis to Cleveland. And, of course, we already have a small network in the Northeast Corridor, and that will extend out to Atlanta, it'll get down to Florida, and then eventually all those networks will connect. So we'll still be able to travel It'll take a little longer. But, you know, high-speed train travel, if you've done it, you know, is a very enjoyable thing. And I do think there'll be a day in the next several decades where you can get on a train in downtown Chicago at Union Station here, right downtown, and get off in Midtown Manhattan at Penn Station 7 hours later. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, just on a personal note, I like to listen to the world. I'm sort of an audio person, and I feel the soundscape has been taken over by engine noise. Did you find any point in your research when we'll finally get rid of useless technology like leaf blowers and Sea-Doos?
Leaf blowers I can't really comment on. People are pretty attached to those because you can plug those in, too.
Oh, right.
But, yeah, I think, you know, stuff like snowmobiles and the more frivolous toys that we use in the woods, so to speak, the dirt bikes of the world, the ATVs, I think, you know, that market for the normal person is going to kind of disappear around $8 a gallon, $10 per gallon. I mean, when it costs $150 just to power your toy for an afternoon of fun, I think people are going to find other ways to have fun. They're certainly going to still going to have fun. And, of course, the kayakers, the canoers, and the wind sailors are all going to appreciate the fact that there's fewer jet skis out there. But, of course, there's a lot of people who love jet skis. So there's pluses and minuses here.
Well, wrapping up, have we missed something important? Is there a thought you'd like to leave with our listeners?
You know, not really. We hit on a lot there. We did a good job. I do think that we could see $6 gas, which I think is going to be a big moment for America, just because we've already been to $4. No one's going to be shocked when we get back there. But we could see $6 in the next 4 to 5 years, perhaps even 3 to 4 years. And that all depends on, of course, the world getting out of the economic malaise that it's in right now. But people don't realize how close peak oil really is. We're probably there right now. And as soon as the world economy gets heated up again, if that happens, we're going to see oil prices go up. We're already back close to $80 now. It's been amazing how quickly we've gone from $30 back in January to $80 now. So there's higher prices in the future.
Even if we don't really get going economically, there's somebody in India right now about to buy their first car, and they'll want to use the oil, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
I'm Alex Smith. This is Radio EcoShock. Our guest has been Christopher Steiner, a senior staff reporter at Forbes magazine and author of the new book, $20 per Gallon. Well, thank you so much for your time, Christopher.
Thanks, Alex. I had a great time.
This is Radio EcoShock. Light up your iPod or computer with tons of free green audio from our website at www.ecoshock.org. That's E-C-O, shock like an electric shock, .org. Thank you so much for tuning in, and join us next week, Sunday night at 10:30, right here on Green 960 AM, KKGN San Francisco. Every week, we toss in the ugly truth about energy, the environment, and our lives ahead. I'm Alex Smith. We'll go out the way we came in with Frank Ace and the Gas Pump Blues.
I don't know what I'm going to do, I'll tell you. I'm fed up. Talked to my buddy in Oklahoma today. He told me that all the gas pumps are pumping out there. So why am I paying $2.15 a gallon? I'm talking about lowly. I ain't talking about supreme. I'm going to have to call the governor. That's all there is to it. I'm going to call the governor. See what's going on.
The gas is too hot.
Used to be I could go get me two hot dogs.
The gas
5 gallons
hot.
Of gas. And a drink for $3.
The gas is too hot.
I can't even afford to drive out
the gas.
$3.